Yo, this is Alex Ingram, professional photographer with Art Is Being, an adjunct professor of photography at the Art Institute of California, San Diego, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with my main man, Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 46. Should you ever give out your RAW files? In this episode, we discuss whether or not to let anyone see your RAW files, Groupon gets sued for copyright infringement, Adobe Bridge gets some helpful updates, interesting happenings on the sidelines at Super Bowl 50, a lesson on the history of photography, and you can now have multiple accounts on Instagram. All that and more in episode 46 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Alex, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Listener Alex Ingram is a San Diego-based professional photographer by day, and by night, he's an adjunct professor at the Art Institute, shaping young minds and teaching them to see differently as they explore their passion for photography. Alex is a great guy, but likes to subject his class to listening to me, of all people. And they're listening right now. Well, now to them, not to you. What are the chances of that happening? Oh, you know what I'm saying. He loves his students, and hey, you in front. Yes, you. Pay attention, we're talking here. All right, as I was saying, he loves his students, and it shows in his enthusiasm for teaching what we all love here, and that's photography. To check out Alex's work, head on over to his website, which is artisbeing.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 46 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. We also greatly appreciate you helping to spread the word on social media and telling your friends, so thank you so much for that. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. I often get asked by listeners and other photographers what my thoughts are on giving clients the raw files after a shoot versus only providing them with the processed files. And my answer, as with most things in photography, is that's right. It depends. It depends on how much time you have. It depends on how much you value artistry. It depends on whether or not you're doing this professionally and what you're trying to accomplish with your photography. There's probably a bunch of other reasons too, but those are, I think, the main ones. You know, if you're short on time and you don't much care to edit your photos, nor do you care what people think about your skills, you're likely to hand over the raw files, get paid, and call it a day. Many people do what's called a shoot and burn. You do the shoot, you burn them to a CD, and you're done. Although these days you're probably using a USB thumb drive or putting them into Dropbox. Personally, I have a problem with doing this sort of thing. If I'm being hired for my photography skills and I'm shooting raw, which I always do, no one is seeing those until after they're processed. Nobody. That's like giving someone the raw materials for a cake. You know, you haven't properly cooked it, nor have you even decorated it. It's not at all representative of what you can do. You want the final product to be something that you're proud of, or at least I do. And I think that most of you out there agree with me on this. We put a lot of hard work into our photography, and we want it to represent us the best way that it can. When you provide a client with the raw files, who knows what they're going to do with them? They might even slap some Instagram-esque filters on them trying to make them look better. I've done shoots in the past where I've processed the raw files, given them beautifully edited photographs, and they went ahead and just applied the most horrendous, horrendous filters to them. And then, of course, everyone thinks that I did that. So whether you give your clients the raw files or you give them processed JPEGs, that's always going to be a problem, I think. And there's only so much you can do to dissuade somebody from doing that. If they want to do that, they're going to do it. But hopefully you have a conversation with them ahead of time, asking them what kind of look they're going for, and then you can do that and make them look nice. Well, photographer Jessica Kobiesi released a video on her popular YouTube channel which addresses this hot topic. Now, some of her arguments are, one, raw files are not the final project, just as we've discussed. Two, prospective clients may get the wrong impression. You know, this is a big one. If you're in business and you give your clients your raw files and they post them, what happens when people ask who shot them? Yeah, not good. In my mind, you want only your processed images out there. Hopefully you talk to whoever you photographed, whether it be your client or someone you just shot, family member, friend, or whatever, and let them know that if they process your photos further, that reflects on you and you wish that they didn't do that. Number three, clients who see your unedited photos are likely to be unhappy. You know, they're expecting them to be great straight out of camera. And we know that no matter how much lighting you do, every raw file requires a little bit of processing. Most files are going to require processing. So if they see these files that are unprocessed, your raw files, that's going to change their opinion of your skill level. I agree with her wholeheartedly on this. Number four, quality over quantity. They say that they want all the raw files, but do they really want to wade through 2,000 photos from their wedding? Do they have that kind of time? Or would they rather have 150 finished, beautiful photos? I think it would be the latter. Of course, everybody thinks, you know, I'm paying for it, I want everything. But that doesn't mean they have to get it. And of course, if you're doing this professionally or even otherwise, put that in your contract. Now, she has more points, but these are just the four that I pulled out. And if you want to see that, you can check out the video. We've got that linked, of course, over in the show notes for episode 46 at petapixel.com/podcast. But I think the bottom line here is, think about what your photos say about you and your photography skills. Think about whether or not it's best to have anything out there representing you but the final product. Now on petapixel.com, we took a poll, and of the more than 1,400 respondents at the time of this recording, 75% said they never give their clients the raw images. About 16% said yes, but rarely. About 6% said yes sometimes, and roughly 3% said yes always. So overwhelmingly, people are not giving their clients the raw images, and I think that's a good thing. But it's a personal decision for sure. For me, no one is seeing a photo that hasn't first been processed. No exceptions. Well, it would take a whole lot of money for me to make an exception. Everyone's got a number, right? If you're an Adobe Bridge user, you might be interested to know that Adobe Bridge CC 6.2 has been released and it has some welcome performance upgrades and features. Adobe Bridge can now purge stale items in its cache while the application isn't being used, so that is going to be very helpful. It'll now clear out things like thumbnails, previews, and metadata from the cache database, thereby reducing the amount of disk space it needs and provides performance benefits with fresh cached items. Another helpful feature is the new cache compaction option that'll force Bridge to do a cache cleanup upon closing the program. What's really helpful is that you can set the threshold for how big you wish the cache to grow before that cleanup kicks in. Of this, Adobe says, quote, "Both these options improve performance of the application and help keep the cache and database clean over extended periods," end quote. Nothing will slow down a program like those things getting bloated. You know, a lot of these programs get bloated enough as it is with their code, but to have the cache and database get out of control just makes it almost impossible to get any work done. So having those things cleared out on a routine basis and being able to set it, huge, huge improvement. They've also revamped how thumbnails, previews, and metadata are made or obtained. That's going to be helpful as well. For instance, when you select a folder, only the items on the screen will have their thumbnails and previews generated now. The rest of the items will only have their info created when you scroll up or down to them or when Bridge is being used. Now, as for metadata, that'll be extracted for all items, allowing the filter and search functions to be usable faster. These changes they've made to Bridge make it more responsive when navigating through large folders instead of the previous sluggishness as it would try to generate large number of previews. We all know what that's like. It is painful. And since metadata and preview generation is separate now, you're able to use filters and search before the previews are completely generated. That's going to be great. Now, if you're a Mac OS 10.11 El Capitan user, you're now able to import from devices. So if you have an iOS or Android mobile device, as well as a digital camera using PTP or MTP modes, you're going to be a happy camper. Previously, Bridge didn't recognize these devices on a Mac. Now that's changed. Adobe is also restoring the AutoStack Panorama / HDR feature in Bridge, and engineers have reworked the program to allow for more serious updates in the future. Adobe says of this, quote, "Given our focus was on stability and performance of Bridge, we have made significant updates to the core technology components. This will set the foundation for a technology platform to enable future development and modernization of Bridge, end quote. You know, I can't wait for the day when Adobe announces the either rewriting or the speeding up of Lightroom like they're doing with Bridge. But of course, that is a huge, massive program. Who knows how many millions of lines of code, but they gotta be working on that, right? Bridge hasn't seen many updates in recent times, but it looks like Adobe's finally putting some resources into changing that, and that's good news. So if you're a Bridge user, this is going to be great for you. Now, hopefully we'll get some love on the Lightroom side one of these days, huh? Just a quick update to mention that Instagram finally allows you to log into multiple accounts via its app, and this is welcome news if, like myself, you want to have one for business and the other for your family and friends only. If you have the latest update to Instagram, click that gear wheel, go to your profile settings, and click add account. Once you do that and you enter your username and password for your other account, from there on out, it's going to be apparent which account you're using, as long as you have different profile photos, of course. Now, if you don't see this yet, check to make sure your Instagram app is updated because this is being rolled out now across the world to iOS and Android users. As I said before, as a photographer, especially if you do it professionally, I think it's important to keep your professional and personal life as separate as you can. So having separate Instagram accounts helps with that greatly. If you've got long, complicated passwords for your Instagram accounts, you might have found that you only used one or the other, or maybe just had one combined account because it was such a pain to log out, put in your password, log back in, and do that. Now, you don't have to do that anymore, and that's going to be huge. Next. To the sports photographers in our audience, and I'm one of them, how many of you would love to shoot a Super Bowl in your lifetime? I know I would. That'd be a lot of fun. But of course, you can't just want to shoot one. You have to be a legitimate member of the media or know someone. And if you're NBA star Kevin Durant, it was a little bit of both. Now, of course, he got the credential because he's an NBA player, but he was also working the game as he was shooting for the Players Tribune. He says, quote, "When I was invited by the Players Tribune and the NFL to be a credentialed photographer on the sidelines during the Super Bowl, I said I'll do it before they even finish their question," end quote. Now, I think pretty much all of us would have reacted that way, right? I mean, even if you're not into sports, how often do you get a chance to shoot the Super Bowl? That's not something you pass up, I think. He was seen shooting the game with a Canon 7D that he got last September for his birthday and reportedly almost left it at home while rushing to catch the plane. This is going to be annoying to some, but as with David Beckham's son, Brooklyn, he has a passion for photography, and that's good enough for me. Durant went on to say, quote, "I've learned a few things while scrambling to take photos. The first thing is, you have to keep your wits about you. It's a safety thing, man. As you're looking for good pictures and scoping things out through your lens, you have to be aware of the action on the field," end quote. Now that's an understatement. You know, on the sidelines at the Super Bowl, it is insanely crowded. Way more crowded than even a normal NFL game. A ton more photographers, of course, are credentialed for the Super Bowl. Space is extremely limited. You know, you can easily get knocked around by other photographers, event staff, security, celebrities on the sidelines, etc. And oh yeah, there are these ginormous, hulking pro football players that are barreling down on you. And when they collide with you, that is not going to be pretty. You know, you really have to be on the sidelines of a football game to appreciate just how crazy it is. I've shot a lot of high school and college sports, and I gotta tell you, when you go to the higher levels, the more important colleges, let's say, it gets crazier and crazier on the sidelines because everyone wants to shoot it. So there's a lot of photographers who are credentialed. Durant goes on to say, quote, "I'm learning how tough these action shots are to get. They happen so fast. It's hectic following the action, then checking your settings in between plays. It's a lot of guessing and adjusting as you go," end quote. Now, of course, this is where experience comes into play. If you're an experienced sports shooter, you can see the light and pretty much know what your settings are going to be and nail it. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that this is a huge advantage of the mirrorless systems. You see your exposure live in the electronic viewfinder, that's the EVF, and make your adjustments without even taking your eye away from it. That is huge. You know, what a great learning tool that is. And no matter what level you're at, it's extremely helpful. If nothing else, there's no need to review your images on the back of your camera, you know, chimping, because you can see them right there in the EVF. Not only that, it's a lot easier to see your images and your exposure than it is to look on the back of the LCD and have to fight, you know, glare and all that. So for those reasons, Durant may enjoy shooting with something like the new Sony a6300, which we recently talked about, as well as their new f2.8 G Master lenses. The thing I love the most about what Kevin Durant said was this, quote, "The biggest thing I learned is something I knew on a certain level, but didn't know until tonight, that sports photography is hard work and it takes a lot of skill and focus in a crazy atmosphere with a lot of distractions. I have a ton of respect for the people who do this as a profession," end quote. You know, he experienced what a lot of us do when we try something new in photography, and that is respect for what it takes to do the job well. So with his passion for photography and respect for the mastery needed to produce great images, I have a newfound respect for Mr. Durant. And hey, maybe he'll cut an intro for us one of these days. That'd be pretty cool. What happens when you're a sizable company and you allegedly use someone's photos without their permission? That's right, you get sued. And that's what happened to Groupon, as the company has been hit with a class action lawsuit that claims that the company, known for its deals, dealt a bad hand to photographers as it repeatedly used Instagram photos without permission. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, the suit filed February 5, 2016 by photographer Christine Dantzel in the Illinois Cook County Circuit District alleges that Chicago-based Groupon used a photo of her in a deal offer for a restaurant in which she had tagged herself on Instagram. Wow. Yeah, not good. The suit claims that over 1,000 Instagram photographers have had their photos stolen in an identical way as, quote, "a core part of Groupon's advertising strategy. Groupon intentionally creates the false impression that the consumers appearing in the photos are endorsing," end quote. They're talking about endorsing the offers, of course. Dantzel says that the usage is a violation of the 1999 Illinois Rights of Privacy Act, which protects people from their name, image, or likeness being used without their permission. The class action lawsuit seeks an unspecified amount in damages from Groupon, whose stock price continues to languish and is nowhere near what it was years ago. You know, I can't imagine Groupon winning this suit. Either you obtained permission or you did not. And if you didn't, that's copyright infringement. So stay tuned. If you're the CEO of the largest corporation the planet has ever known, and I'm talking about Apple here, and you shoot a blurry photo at Super Bowl 50 with your company's signature product, the iPhone, you're going to hear about it, of course. And that's what happened this past Super Bowl Sunday, as Apple CEO Tim Cook posted a photo via his Twitter account that didn't exactly show what the iPhone is capable of. The photo was horrible, by pretty much everyone's definition. Not just blurry, but not interesting at all. But hey, he's not a photographer, right? As you might expect, people took the photo, made memes of it, and really let him have it. Some even going so far as to lampoon the Shot on iPhone 6 campaign. Now, after the game, he actually shot a photo, which is much better, but he might want to leave the photography to the pros because he's so high profile, anything he shoots with an iPhone is going to be criticized, of course. And hey, maybe he had too much caffeine before he took the shot, or he was really amped up because he was at the Super Bowl. That's a pretty exciting thing. Turned out to be a boring game, but you know what? He didn't know that at the time. Next. I think that one of the most unfortunate ways that one can die is by shooting a selfie. And as we discussed way back in episode 6 of this podcast, there are now more deaths by selfie than by shark attacks. You know, as photographers, we can relate to wanting to get a better angle, a better photograph, etc. But it is, of course, never worth it for a selfie. Actually, there's very few times it's worth risking your life for a photograph in general. And especially if you're taking a risk, take a picture of yourself, that'd be a pointless way to die, I think. Well, Zachary Crockett over at Priceonomics recently collected all the data that he could find, and since 2014, it looks like 75% of those who died from shooting a selfie were male. And that's pretty surprising to me. It seems like females are shooting way more selfies than guys, but apparently, we're more risky, we all know it, and 75% of those who are dying are men. Now, he also found that the average age of those dying by selfie was just 21 years old. You think that it'd be lower than that. You think it'd be like 16-year-olds, right? Nope. Of the 49 people who were found to have died in this manner, 16 were from falling from heights, 14 drowned, 8 were from a train, 4 from gunshots, amazingly, 2 from a grenade, 2 from a plane crash, 2 also from a car crash, and 1 from an animal. But amazingly, 19 of these deaths happened in India, with 7 in Russia and 5 from the United States. That's pretty surprising to me. I chose to do this story mostly because I think it's important to be mindful of your surroundings when you're doing your photography. And that doesn't just mean selfies. That means your photography in general. We have our eye to the viewfinder. We're often so engrossed in what we're doing that we forget about safety. Not only safety in protecting our gear, but our actual physical safety. And that doesn't just mean deaths. You know, back in 2011, photographer David Duchemin famously fell about 30 feet or so off a wall while he was getting ready to do a shoot. And here on the podcast, we've done countless stories on those who didn't hear the train coming that took their life. You know, our audience is large and growing daily, and we thank you for that. And somewhere in our audience is a photographer who's going to avoid disaster by being more mindful now. So please be careful out there. It is never, or I should say, rarely worth risking your life for a photograph, especially a selfie. If you need a refresher on the history of photography, there's a great video put out by COOPH, that's the Cooperative of Photography, which does a great job of letting you know what you need to know to get up to speed. It covers everything from the early days of the camera obscura on up to the emergence of smartphones and online photo sharing. And I think it's well worth the time it takes to watch it. So if you've got a few minutes, head on over to the show notes. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 46 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. And if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right. With that, I'll see you all in episode 47. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.